Hi everyone, and welcome back to the 16th video of the Old Testament Survey course. In this section, we'll look at the book of Deuteronomy, which is the last book of the Torah. We'll look at this book in the usual categories, which means that first we'll look at some background information. As already mentioned, Deuteronomy is the final book of the Pentateuch, and so the question of authorship and time of writing is the same for the rest of the Torah. Even though Moses' authorship of Deuteronomy has been denied more than for the other books, the evidence still points to Moses as the primary author of Deuteronomy, and it was written near the end of the 40 years' wandering. Next is the name of this book. The Hebrew title for this book is These Are the Words, and this title comes from the very first words of the book, These Are the Words Which Moses Spoke. And the name for this book, which is most familiar, is the Greek word Deuteronomy. This comes from two Greek words. The first means second, as in the one after the first, and the other means law. And so the term Deuteronomy literally means second law. It's not a second law in the sense of being a different law, supplementing or replacing the first, but it is a second law in terms of being a restatement of the same law that was revealed at Sinai. Deuteronomy repeats and reiterates much that has already been stated in the Pentateuch. The Ten Commandments are repeated in Deuteronomy. But this title means more than just a restatement of God's law. Deuteronomy is also second law in the sense that it is a covenant renewal. As we'll see in a minute, Deuteronomy is actually in the form of a covenant document. This is a profound demonstration of God's character, because this is after the golden calf incident, but the covenant is restored. This is after the unbelief in the desert, but the covenant is restored. This is after the 40 years of wandering and rebellion, but the covenant is renewed. God's people are punished when they sin, but God renews the covenant and forwards his promises in his faithfulness. And Deuteronomy also signals a new beginning for God's people. The covenant is inaugurated for the next generation. Remember, this comes at the end of 40 years of wandering and at the beginning of life in the land, bridging the gap between the desert and the promised land. And Deuteronomy is Moses' final words of instruction before he dies. It is like Moses' last will and testament. And Deuteronomy also serves to summarize the Pentateuch and review God's working and covenant with his people Israel in preparation to inherit the promised land. As we'll highlight in a minute, Deuteronomy looks backward and looks forward at the same time. Now let's examine the organization of Deuteronomy. There are two ways that Deuteronomy can be outlined, both of which are faithful to the text and the intent of the author. First, many scholars have noted that Deuteronomy has the same general outline as a typical covenant treaty of that period. After a brief preamble, which introduces the document, there is a historical prologue, which rehearses the history of God with his people up to that point. Remember Exodus chapter 19, the introduction to the Ten Commandments in the Sinai covenant? Well, this historical prologue serves the same kind of function, introducing what led up to the renewing of this covenant. Next are the covenant stipulations. These give detailed instructions what God expects from his people. This includes a restatement of the Ten Commandments and then a variety of laws that reflect God's character. Then is a provision for the covenant document to be stored and publicly read on a regular basis for future generations. And next is a call to witnesses, such as heaven and earth, to bear witness that the covenant document is entered and is to be taken seriously. And finally is a listing of the curses and blessings. Curses that will happen if the covenant is broken, and blessings that will be experienced by faithful conformity to the covenant relationship. All these are standard contents of a typical covenant document. So that is one way to organize and outline this book. And like I said, this is an appropriate way to understand Deuteronomy, because it is a covenant document for the renewing of God's covenant with his people right before they entered the promised land. And then the second possible way to outline Deuteronomy is around the three speeches of Moses. Now, this outline is equally valid and true and equally makes sense of the text of Deuteronomy. In this organizational scheme, there is the same brief introduction to the book, then the first speech, which recounts God's past dealing with Israel. The second speech records the covenant laws in two parts. The first part covers general laws for all situations, and the second part gives more specific laws for specific situations. And then the third speech is a covenant ceremony and the charge to Israel to keep the covenant. Then there is an appendix to the speeches to address some final items. This, the second way to think about the organization of Deuteronomy. Like I said, both outlines are legitimate ways to organize this book. Now let's take a minute to look at the bigger picture organization, to address how Deuteronomy fits in the Old Testament as a whole. Deuteronomy has a unique place that I liken to a transition hinge. And like a literal hinge, it connects two things, connecting two parts of the Old Testament. On the one hand, looking back to the rest of the Pentateuch, it restates the covenant and Exodus story, rehearsing all that God has done in their past. And on the other hand, looking forward to the latter historical books of the Old Testament, it talks about how they are to live in the land they are about to enter. And Deuteronomy is obviously in the middle. It is the last book of the Torah, but also the first book of what is called the Deuteronomic history. It addresses a new generation and their descendants living in renewed promises. And as we'll see in a future section, the historical books that follow look back to Deuteronomy to make sense of their history. The history books describe the working out of the blessings and curses of Deuteronomy in the subsequent history of Israel. They saw their own history from the perspective of this book. And I also want to remind you of this diagram, that the primary history is told from Genesis through Kings, and Deuteronomy is right in the middle, at a critical juncture of this history. So Deuteronomy is a very important book, summarizing what has gone before and preparing for what will come after. Now, let's look at the content of Deuteronomy, as usual, starting with some key verses. First, Deuteronomy 4, 1 and 2 says, "Hear now, O Israel, the decrees and laws I'm about to teach you. Follow them so that you may live and may go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Do not add to what I command you, and do not subtract from it, but keep the commands of the Lord your God that I give you." This passage is an exhortation to keep God's commands, and they're not allowed to choose which commands to obey and which not to. Neither are they allowed to add to God's commands, and their obedience relates to possessing the land that God is giving them. Next is Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 7. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commands that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up." Now this passage is called the Great Shema. Shema is the Hebrew word for hear. And this passage is kind of like the national anthem of Israel, the summary of their entire life. And Jesus quoted this passage as the first and greatest command. God's people are to love him with every part of their lives, with complete devotion. God himself is to be his people's number one desire and concern. He is to fill their thoughts, affections, and conversations in all their life. And of course, this is true for Christians as well. Then the next passage, Deuteronomy 7, 6 through 9, clarifies the identity of God's people. It says, "For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. The Lord did not set his affection on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other peoples, for you were the fewest of all peoples. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your forefathers that he brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the land of slavery, from the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to a thousand generations of those who love him and keep his commands. God's people are put in proper perspective. They have tremendous privilege, but they cannot boast in this privilege because they are not the cause of it. God's grace and love are the only reason they are his people, not their own qualifications. Therefore, God's covenant love is the focus of God's people. The next passage is Deuteronomy 11, 22 through 28. This says, "If you carefully observe all these commands I am giving you to follow, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to hold fast to him, then the Lord will drive out all these nations before you, and you will dispossess nations larger and stronger than you. Every place where you set your foot will be yours. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the Euphrates River to the Western Sea. No man will be able to stand against you. The Lord your God, as he promised you, will put the terror and fear of you on the whole land, wherever you go. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I'm giving you today. The curse if you disobey the commands of the Lord your God and turn from the ways that I command you today by following other gods which you have not known." Now, this passage first highlights God's promise to give them the land. God will drive out nations and give it to them as an inheritance. And it also summarizes the two-sided promise of the covenant, the possibility of blessings or cursings. If God's people are faithful to his covenant, they will experience blessings. However, if they are unfaithful, they will experience curses. Both possibilities are clearly communicated to his people beforehand so that they can see the consequences of their actions and respond appropriately. And obviously, they should choose faithfulness and blessing. Then the last key verse, Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 16, has a similar message. It says, "Now what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven so that you have to ask who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess." Now, this passage stresses that God's will is knowable and challenges his people to know it and obey it. Like the previous passage, the two possibilities and their consequences are clearly communicated. God offered them life or death, and God strongly commanded them to follow his way and find life. These are some of the main ideas of Deuteronomy as seen in the key verses. Now let's look more closely at the content of each section. First, the introduction verses. This passage sets the historical context. It basically summarizes the history of Exodus and Numbers. It took them 40 years to take an 11-day trip, but God defeated powerful kings. And this brief intro ends by saying that Moses began to expound the law, saying, and that leads into Moses' first speech. This section is a more in-depth historical review of their recent past, and Moses emphasized that God was always faithful. When Israel was obedient, they succeeded. When Israel was disobedient, they failed. The history is crystal clear on this matter, And the point is that they should learn this lesson well, and therefore they should prepare to be obedient. And then Moses' second speech lays out the covenant stipulations in detail. As I mentioned before, this larger section has two parts. In the first part, chapters 5 through 11, God gives general principles, some of which I will summarize. The first thing in this section is the second statement of the Ten Commandments. Laws so nice, he says them twice. They are important enough to be emphasized for the next generation. Then is the great Shema, which we've already read. There is only one God, and God is the kind of God that he is. Therefore, he deserves all our love, attention, respect, and obedience. And great stress is made on the need to pass on God's story and his commands to the next generation. God is not just for that generation, but he's also God of their descendants. And reaching the next generation is always a very high priority for God's people. Next, Deuteronomy stresses the need to have both love and fear toward God. This describes a proper relation to God, to have both of these things. Now, these two things might seem at odds, but they both necessarily work together when it comes to God. We do need to fear him because he is God and we are not. And if we are disobedient or rebellious, he has the authority to discipline us, which will hurt. And we need to love him because he is God and we are not. And he is worthy of our love. We need to value God and respect God. And we need both of these things. If we have just love, we fall into a sentimentality that is soft on sin and ultimately unfaithful to God. And if we have just fear, we're driven away from God into legalism, and we don't have true relationship. And we see this is possible in human relationships. For instance, I love my father, yet I would never mess with him. How much more for our heavenly Father? Again, he is God, and we're not. Then the next principle is the absolute prohibition of any form of idolatry. Because God is who he is, idolatry is stupid, insane, and dangerous, because there's nothing even close to God. So to pursue a substitute should be unthinkable. Then the second part, seen in chapters 12 through 26, gives specific applications of God's commands for all of life. They're applications aimed at life in the land God will give them. They address religious, civil, and personal issues, everyday life, and every part of life. They are an elaboration and explanation of issues from the Ten Commandments. Now, we don't have time to go into detail because there's so much here, but your textbook has a helpful chart showing how this section is an expansion of these issues regarding our relationship with God and our relationship with other humans. It summarizes these commands under the categories of authority, dignity, commitment, and rights and principles. Now, this is a helpful discussion if you would like to follow it up further. Now, I need to remind you of a disclaimer. Whenever we talk about God's laws, it's important to remember the proper purpose of the law, the intended purpose of the law. These commands are not requirements to be a part of God's covenant community. They are just what life in God's covenant community should look like. They can never be used to gain God's favor because they described blessed living in God's favor. Now, this does not, however, mean that they are optional, as we'll see in the next section. And that brings us to Moses' third speech, which is about confirming the covenant. This section begins with detailed plans for the covenant renewal ceremony. This is the plan for the ceremony which will take place in the land at Shechem between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. The ceremony is commanded here, and it will take place later in Joshua chapter 8. The next part gives a detailed list of blessings and cursing, which will happen if Israel is faithful or unfaithful to the covenant. This is so emphasized that this kind of two-choice, two-result connection has been called deuteronomistic theology, the theology of Deuteronomy. And we'll look at that concept in just a few minutes. The next part is a command to choose between life and death. In chapter 30, God said, "This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I've set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." The command is to choose now how you will behave when you get into the land. This is what I call advanced decision-making. Decisions in advance. Plan and act now for future temptations and decisions. Because nobody drifts into holiness. Nobody stumbles into greatness. If you're not prepared for temptations and decisions, you won't do very well. Championships are won at practice before they are won in the game. And therefore, we need a strategy and plan to serve God well. So I suggest we all think carefully about these two choices and their consequences, and then purpose deep in our heart that we will serve God no matter what, and have a strategy to carry this out. Then the last section is an appendix detailing final preparations to enter and live in the land. First, there is a transfer of leadership to Joshua. Joshua was already second in command after Moses, but the succession was clearly confirmed by God for all the people to know. Next, provision was made for regular reading of the law and a reminder of the covenant. Humans forget and stray easily. We all need regular reminders of the truth and reality of God, and therefore God built this in to the life of Israel. And that's why good churches train their people to read the Bible daily, so that God's word is more of an influence on our minds than the TV or social media. Then the next section is called the Song of Moses. This is a song that God taught Moses, and which Moses was to teach Israel to sing. And this is kind of an unusual song for them to sing because it is basically an accusation against them. They were to sing a song basically about how much they suck. Technically, this song is a covenant lawsuit. It addresses the past and the future. It predicts Israel's unfaithfulness and God's continued grace. In Israel's later history, God's prophets used the language from this song to accuse Israel of their idolatry. And then Moses gave his final charge and farewell. He gave a blessing for each tribe, similar to how Jacob did at the end of Genesis. This is God's sovereign predictions of the future of each tribe. And then Moses was told to climb Mount Nebo on the border. He looked over and saw the promised land from afar. Moses saw the promised land, but never entered it. And Deuteronomy ends with the death of Moses. And he gets a eulogy of a hero loved and honored by all. That's the content of the book of Deuteronomy in summary. So now let's look at the theological themes of Deuteronomy. The first theme is Deuteronomistic theology. This, as we saw earlier, is that there is blessing for obedience and curses for disobedience. It is if-then theology. If you do this, then this will happen. There are clearly lined out results and retribution for different responses to God. And it's black and white, in or out, blessing or cursing. Choose one side or the other, and you're choosing your destiny. The second theme is covenant. Now, we've already seen this theme in earlier books, so I won't explain it much, except to say that it is a major idea in Deuteronomy, even to the point that Deuteronomy is in the form of a covenant renewal document. And much of this book is actually renewing and strengthening the covenant relationship. The third theme is monotheism. Monotheism is a combination of the word mono, which means one, and theism, which means the worship of God. Therefore, monotheism is the idea that there's only one God, and about faithfulness to that one God. Deuteronomy constantly emphasizes that God is one. He is the only God. There is no other. And therefore, he deserves exclusive worship and loyalty, because there is no other. And the fourth theme is love and fear. As we already talked about, we need both, and the two go together. This is the appropriate response to who God is. The fifth theme is no idolatry. Because monotheism is the truth, idolatry is insanity. And Deuteronomy, in talking about their future in the land, it promises that God will reveal the one place he is to be worshipped, and that is the only place where he should be worshipped. Now, we'll see how that plays out in later books. But remember, the clear idea in Deuteronomy is that devotion to anything but God is completely forbidden. And the final theme is driving out the nations. God commanded them to drive out the nations that were living in the promised land, and that's because of the wickedness and idolatry of those nations. And God promised that he would go before them to make that happen. Now, notice in Deuteronomy, the land is not called the land. It's not even called the promised land. It is almost always called the land which Yahweh your God is giving you. This drum is beaten many times throughout Deuteronomy, looking forward to entering the land which Yahweh your God is giving you. Right? These are the themes of Deuteronomy. Now, because Deuteronomy is the last book of the Pentateuch, let's take a minute to review and summarize the Torah as a whole. These five books cover the first two and part of the third epoch of all Old Testament history. The rest of the Old Testament builds on this foundation. Now, God created everything good. Humanity rebelled against God and spiraled downhill. God made a promise to Abraham to bless the world through him. This promise was protected to his descendants. God rescued them out of Egypt with miraculous displays of his mighty power, and he entered a covenant relationship with them to be their God, and they will be his people. He brought them to the border of the land he was about to give them, renewed the covenant, and gave them directions how to live in the land. Now, whenever I teach this material in a classroom setting, we typically have a discussion about how to summarize each book of the Torah with just one word. And we even play a game to see if students can figure out which word I will choose. Now, since we can't do this on a video, I suggest you think about this before I tell you. How would you summarize each book of the Torah using only one word? But you better do it quick or pause the video, because I'm about to tell you. Here are the five books of Moses and their five summary words. First is Genesis. Now, there are a few good possibilities, such as promise, but I think the obvious choice is beginnings. Next is Exodus. This one is tougher. It could be covenant, presence, or name, but I've chosen salvation, because this word encompasses both the rescue from Egypt, what they were saved from, and the covenant relationship with God, what they were saved for. Third is Leviticus. It could be sacrifice or worship, but I think the word holiness covers both right worship and right living. Fourth is Numbers, and this was a tough decision. I almost went with rebellion, but it's not all rebellion. There is some obedience and faithfulness. Therefore, I went with wanderings, because most of the book is spent wandering in the desert, and the reason for their wandering is rebellion, so it kind of catches both. Finally is Deuteronomy. Now, second law is two words, so that's disqualified. And as we talked about, it's more than just a restatement of the law. It is a renewing of the covenant relationship. Therefore, I summarize the book of Deuteronomy with the word renewal. And I hope these five words become a handle to help you remember the message of the five books of Moses for the long term. And I hope that the shorthand summaries of the organization and themes for each book helps you to remember, understand, and apply these books to your life. And therefore, let's review. First, the organization of the book of Deuteronomy. What I would like you to remember is that there are two legitimate organization patterns of Deuteronomy. They are as the pattern of a typical covenant and around the three speeches of Moses. Second is the themes of Deuteronomy. They are Deuteronomistic theology, covenant, monotheism, love and fear, no idolatry, and dispossessing the nations. A helpful memory device around the first letter of each theme is Deuteronomy, come into the land. And finally, the one-word summaries for the Pentateuch. They are Genesis, beginnings, Exodus, salvation, Leviticus, holiness, Numbers, wanderings, and Deuteronomy, renewal. There you have it. We've completed our survey of Deuteronomy and the five books of Moses as a whole. As we go through the rest of the Old Testament, keep these books in mind because everything builds on what we've already seen. In the next section, we'll introduce the historical books. And then in the following, we'll start with the book of Joshua. Thanks for watching.